Building high-growth companies requires more than strategy. It demands resilience, adaptability, and a willingness to learn through uncertainty. The journey from operator to investor offers a unique lens into what truly drives success at every stage of growth. In this episode of the Privately Speaking podcast, host and KPMG partner Erica Whitmore sits down with Kat Kennedy, general partner at Kickstart Fund, for a candid conversation about what it really takes to build and back high-growth companies. From founder mindset to investor expectations, the discussion covers scaling with intention, learning through experimentation, and managing the realities of growth in the age of AI.
Hi, Kat. So excited to have you here with us today. Thank you for being willing to be on the Privately Speaking podcast. As I think I shared with you when we met and had breakfast, it's one of the favorite things that I get to do for KPMG. So thanks for being willing to be on and share your story. I just think you have a really cool story, and I think our listeners would be very inspired by it. So again, really appreciate you taking the time. But if you're okay with it, maybe give just a couple of minutes background on yourself.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
As said, I'm Kat. I'm one of the general partners at Kickstart Fund. We do early stage investing, pre-seed and seed in the Mountain West. So think Utah, Colorado, a little bit of New Mexico, Montana, and Idaho as well. And we're a generalist fund. So we invest across every sector. If you look at our portfolio, the bulk of it is software, and that's just due to the geo, but really we'll look at and invest in anything that we think can generate a venture type return. So I've been at Kickstart for 4 years, and prior to joining Kickstart, I was running a software company called Degreed.
Imagine that. Yes.
Degreed. Yeah, so I've spent a lot of time in that office back in New York. And let's see. So what brought me to Degreed is I'm a software developer.
Yeah.
So I did information systems, which is a watered down version of computer science, and that in at university, then worked as a software developer and just kind of fell into a venture-backed startup without understanding what a venture-backed startup actually was. I thought if you called yourself a business, you were profitable. And that I learned very quickly is not true. So learned the beauty of venture by being inside a venture-backed startup and just seeing the power that can come alongside capital injected in unnatural ways.
Yeah.
So, great to be here.
I love it. Yeah. Well, and Kat, for background, and I think most of my audience knows this, but you know, I've spent my career in Colorado and now I'm in Utah, and I've been here for about 2 years and I'm in the office here for KPMG. But one of the distinct differences between the two markets that I find super intriguing, and I really do want you to touch on just a tad, is I feel like in this market, there's a lot more crossover between, like, there's no like normal like path on the career. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's people that kind of jump around. They do venture, they do startup companies, they might work at a bank. Like, literally, so many different diverse skill sets doing what you wouldn't normally see as like quote unquote a traditional career path, right? And so, anyways, that was one of the things that really intrigued me about you. But you're not the only one in this market. You're pretty unique, but it just seems to be more of a thing here. And so if you can just comment on that, like what do you think kind of contributes to that? Because I think it's super interesting.
I think, you know, we pride ourselves, we talk about the ecosystem and the community a lot in Utah. And that really is, I think, the heart of it is it's a true community. It's a small lake city. Everybody knows everybody.
Which I like that. Small lake
city. Great. Yeah, it's a lot of great networking opportunities.
Yeah.
And I think so many careers, no matter where you're located, can be tied back to the network and the opportunities awarded you because of that network. My dad would say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Well, good for you. Everybody knows everybody, which just leads to a lot of great cross-pollination and opportunities across the board, both within the venture community and the startup ecosystem, but broadly,
yeah,
beyond that as well.
Yeah. Well, and I do have to do a shameless plug. The Mountain West has been getting more capital and Utah is outsized, punching above its weight. So anyways, all good things. So, okay, let's jump in a little bit because I do think that there are some things that you have learned going from operator to investor, right? That you could really help, you know, kind of our high growth companies are, just as a reminder, like our audience is generally high growth companies. I think a lot of tech, but also industry agnostic, right? Companies that are growing really fast and private may or may not have received venture funding, you know, might be considering it, right? So that's kind of the audience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think they could learn a lot, right? From you going, it's such an interesting, you know, path. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I joke that I wish I had been at least more aware of venture and the business of venture.
Okay.
In the early days of Degreed, I believe very firmly now, it would have made me way more effective in all of the different roles I was able to play at Degreed. And the big lessons that I then am insistent that I'm sharing with the founders that I'm so lucky to get to work with is just like, venture allows you to do unnatural things at unnatural times.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you're getting in exchange for the capital and like us taking equity is time and options and experimenting. And, you know, I think back to elementary school and just the scientific method, and you're learning and you're failing and you're learning and you're failing. Yep. And sometimes you'll succeed, but like the learning is the magic. And so taking advantage of these unnatural moments to experiment and to learn very quickly.
Yeah.
Where I just wanted to be right all of the time. And I think, you know, you're trying to be right, you're selling a lot. And that can, I just had blinders on.
Sure.
Where if I'd been more open to experimenting and the actual process of experimenting, I think I would have, you know, implemented the learnings a lot faster. The other thing that I think, whether you take on outside capital or not, I think is beautiful in injecting capital is you're burning it. So runway, we don't expect you to be profitable for a while. And so by that means you're going to be burning. You're going to run out of cash at some point. That constraint creates so much magic.
Yeah.
And so whether you actually have that constraint or not, I challenge everyone to operate as though you have that constraint, because if there's constraints, just create beautiful things.
Yeah.
And a lot of learnings. The other lesson, what did I write down this morning? Just, hey, don't take it personally when you do fail.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't mean that you're failing.
Yeah.
I tell the CEOs that I support, like, hey, guess what? Everything's on fire all the time. When I ask you how things are going and you tell me good, like either you're naive, which is terrible, or you're not trusting me enough to tell me what's really going on. And so I think embracing the dumpster fire that is operating a business, whether you're a venture-backed business or not, something's always broken. And that's why it's fun. And so just like embrace the beauty of the constraints and don't shy away from facing them head on and talking about them head on. I think there's so much beauty in the problems that we face.
Absolutely.
And embracing and talking about them and discussing those learnings, I think, is magic versus like, we're crushing it. Everything's up and to the right. Like, no, it's not.
No, it's not. So, Kat, I'm going to take this and you probably need to patent this. Embracing the dumpster fire. That's my favorite.
I'll put it on a t-shirt for us
and I'll wear it around the office because even at KPMG, you know, we are embracing AI, right? And we have a lot of different tools and it's embedded in our systems now in terms of how we deliver our services to our clients, right? But it does require our people to try stuff that's not going to work, right?
You have to keep doing it, right? And so I do think
experimenting with AI for all of us, depending on whether that's in our professional lives or frankly our personal lives, like it forces you to continue to fail, right? Not get the right answer and you have to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. Embracing the dumpster fire. I love that. That makes a lot of sense. And you know, it sounds to me too, like you really want that trusted relationship with your founders so that you can be advisor is probably not the right, but you can be helpful, right? As an investor, you're not just kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting to see how they execute it against their business model. You want to help them.
Yeah, very much so. There's this joke, like I come from the founder side of like, how much value can investors actually bring? And so I was a skeptic even as I joined this side of the table.
Yeah.
And I'm so lucky to be in an incredible partnership of just high integrity and very highly trusted people. So as I was doing the references on them and where I should go post, you know, my time at Degreed, they were the type of investors that I would have loved to have on our cap table. And what was it about them? They're just like, at the end of the day, yes, we have pattern recognition and there's learnings that we have, but entrepreneurial journeys are unique by nature. So our patterns are not the patterns we've seen in other places. They might rhyme, but they're not going to be exactly true. So our advice can be very wrong.
Yeah.
And so really, I think at my best, I'm a great listener to the founders and I'm giving them a safe space to work through the constraints that they're facing. At the end of the day, like I want to be the Sunday night phone call when stuff is on fire. I want to be the, hey, we just closed this big client call, client as well. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, the most value that we really can bring is a trusted sounding board.
Yeah.
And it's safe space in the good times and in the bad and the reality of any business, whether you're, you know, receiving capital outside or not, it's like there's something going on every day that can be refined and improved. And it's really hard to solve those things alone.
Yeah.
It's the beauty in having an executive team. It's the beauty in having advisors. It's like, hey, just different perspective gives you more of a viewpoint in solving any problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the joke about value out investor, like at my best, I'm a phone call.
Well, I love it. Well, that is awesome. I will call you any day.
Deal. I look forward to it.
That works great for me. So kind of continuing to pull on this theme, right, where you've had great experience in both kind of the builder as well as the investor. What changes, but what doesn't change? Like, what are the similarities between the two worlds?
My favorite thing is we're diversified now.
Yeah.
The diversification takes a lot of the emotional weight that being a founder, like you're going to bed, you're waking up, you're dreaming about that one thing. And there's so much to that, both intellectually, but especially emotionally. Yeah. Of just carrying that weight of all of those employees and payroll and your clients, right? Like that weighs very heavily. I think on the investor side, it's very similar. I'm still thinking about things all of the time.
Yeah.
But the emotional diversification alongside the financial diversification, of course, is really nice. And I don't take it for granted as I'm working with the founders. But other than that, it's very similar. When you make the switch from operator to investor, that is usually the first question I get is like, what's it like? How are you enjoying? Driving you crazy? All the same muscles get deployed.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for the muscles developed in operating and that, hey, those aren't lost now that I'm on the investor side. The biggest difference is the diversification. And we get to look at companies in every sector all of the time. We'll see new ones. Like that is delightful and also very healthy perspective where I also encourage the founders that I back to like do a little angel investing, even if it's really tiny checks.
Yeah.
Because those are going to broaden your perspective, both in what's happening, but also how other people are solving problems.
So yeah.
I encourage them to, whether they're angel investing or just doing regular coffees and lunches, that's a very helpful thing because you can get a bit myopic.
Yeah.
I think due to that lack of diversification, it's like, that's what you're...
Yep. That's what your whole life is focused on. Yeah. No, that makes sense. So I love this question. What's one founder signal you trust more than a pitch deck?
Everything. The pitch deck is... the least helpful thing, honestly.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm an engineer, like all my background, right? So of course I have a rubric that I put to work. And we're early stage investors. So the company that we invest in, we're literally seeing it at the worst it will ever be.
Right, right.
And the idea is going to change. And so most of what we're looking at is the founders.
Yeah.
And the
team they have. Yeah.
The team that they have. Like, can they recruit? Have they done hard things before? Are they high integrity? And so the things that I'm looking at outside of the pitch deck are things that can verify any assumption that I have across that regard, which is mostly character. So I'm talking to people that they introduce me to. I'm talking to people that they don't introduce me to.
Sure.
We also have a requirement for our seed checks. So those are our larger checks. We have to do something with those founders outside of the office.
Sure.
Like whether it's going on a hike, because we're lucky to be in the mountains across
right.
the country, or taking them to dinner, right? Just something to get outside of the formality of the boardroom and yeah. see, are we connecting with them? But at the end of the day, it comes down to the people.
Yeah.
The pitch deck, it tells me whether they can tell a story effectively or not, but there's very little else that I actually am getting from a pitch deck. And it breaks my heart because I know how much work goes into those.
Yes.
And now that I'm a few years in, I know how they're helpful. They're helpful in getting you into the room. But once you're in the room, they're not as helpful.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So in terms of just scaling lessons and maybe especially if you've seen any, you know, every meeting I go to anymore is about AI, right? I mean, it's just, you can't ignore it. You can't get away from it. It is what it is. It is here, right?
Yeah.
And so just lessons for private companies, especially those who are, you know, kind of navigating that journey, whether it's part of their, you know, core product or whether it's more from an efficiency standpoint on, you know, in the back office, et cetera. What are kind of lessons for these private companies?
With AI or scaling in general?
I would say scaling in general.
I was so lucky to be a part. I joined as the first employee at Degreed. So it was me and the founders. Retroactively, I'll call myself the founder, but yeah. They gave me a paycheck and they weren't getting a paycheck. So I don't get the actual title.
Okay.
I was first employee and I left as president. So I was there through, hey, this is just a twinkle in our eye to yeah. It's a real global business serving, you know, the best companies in the world. And every 6 months, the company changed and the role changed. And so as you find product market fit and you start to scale,
yeah,
and you want scale, not just cash flow. I think if you're going for scale, you have to embrace that very uncomfortable reality that what got you to the current point is not going to get you to the next point.
Yeah.
And that doesn't just mean that the processes need to change, like who you are inside of your role and maybe even the role that you're in and can do is going to change.
Yeah.
And so as I coach CEOs, that's very much the thing is like, who's the right person in that seat for like the next 12 to 18 months max.
Yeah.
And then if they're going to stay in that seat, what do they have to evolve into? And just get comfortable with that, that right. like, it's not going to be forever. Everything needs to change. And that means it's working.
Yeah.
If the evolution is required. And also that few people want to be there at every stage. I was the one person that stayed through, yeah. you know, pre-seed to post Series D.
But you had to evolve a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. I had a few different titles, but like tons of different roles.
Yeah.
And so like if you're an insatiable learner, if you're super comfortable in ambiguity and yeah. like happy to hire people way more capable than you and that doesn't yes. hurt your ego, like that's yeah. a great sign that you're going to be able to scale.
Yeah.
My greatest strength is that I am not naive to all of my naivete and I'll say it out loud and yeah. I'm more than happy to hire people way better than me in the role. And so just embrace that and know that like that very active embracing it is what makes you capable to yeah. scale. You Absolutely. Don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to be the best at doing the thing. You have to be the best at recognizing that someone needs to be the best at doing that thing. And can you hire the best person to do that thing? And then just accept if you're not, that's totally okay. There's very few founders that enjoy 0 to 1 that are going to enjoy being a public CEO because right. those are vastly different.
Yes.
the vision and the storytelling that's required in the early days are so different than the operational acumen that starts to come in as you throw growth capital at things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And few people enjoy both. Some do, but it's okay. And so that's a lot of the conversation is just like, what do you actually like to do? And how can we be activating your strengths at every stage of the journey?
Yeah.
And also as people are considering funding, I think that's a big part of the question is like scale is a journey. Do you really want to go on that journey?
Yeah.
And neither path is right nor wrong. I think a cash flowing profitable business is an amazing thing. And there's, I think with AI, we're going to see even more of those types of businesses, which makes me so happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think be intentional as you are going through every stage and in deciding both what you want for yourself and what you want for your business would be a summary of all of that counsel. I think with AI, it gets even more exciting because the pace at which we can go through scale is accelerated.
Yes.
Which is exciting and also terrifying. We already call it scale a rocket ship. You know, and it's not because it's like, oh, I'm at the moon and it's delightful. It's like, no, a rocket ship is terrifying. You're shaking to get out of orbit and, you know, feels like you might not make it.
Right.
And acceleration even on that. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot for people.
What is your biggest concern right now with the AI and how that can really speed things up, but frankly, probably mess things up as well?
Yeah, a lot of conversations I've been having over the past month have been deploy it where it's helpful. Deploy it where it's helpful. Don't be like, we're going to automate every role and we're going to token max. And like, maybe that is right for your business or maybe it's not.
Yeah.
So like deploy AI where it brings you value. Of course, be curious and thoughtful, but don't overdo it either. There's some systems that like, maybe they don't need it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a fraction of it. And so I would say like with any new technology, we would be pushing ourselves to be very thoughtful in how we're implementing it and where we're implementing it. I think AI is very similar. What's different about AI and where I think the pendulum is swinging a little more erratically is it's a very technical and not often understood underneath.
Yes.
But the UI is very simple.
Sure. Yes.
And the way to interact with it, which I think that contrast leads to a lot of confusion.
Yes.
For those of us who are using it day to day and thinking about ways to implement it, there's just so much ambiguity. You have to be a real nerd to really get it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I gave any guidance there.
I think that's great. I did want you to share your story, if you're okay, Kat. Because when we met, we talked about just our kids, right? And like they're growing up in such a different time. And I thought I think it was your daughter, what you have her doing like with AI, I thought was really, really cool. And I've been trying to get my kids to experiment more. But are you willing to share?
Oh, I'm more than happy to share. Yeah. My kids are always asking me for money, of course. Yeah. The kids. I have a 14, a 10, and a 4-year-old. So the 14 and the 4-year-old, not yet asking for money, but I think that time is short. Right. So the older two, I said, my 14-year-old daughter, she works at her dance studio, but she's wanting to earn even more money. And my 10-year-old, not yet old enough to get a part-time job. And so I said, I would pay them $10 an hour to use Cloud Code or Codex, whatever they want, to build apps. And it can be whatever they want.
Right.
And I'll just pay them to figure it out and to build stuff. And it's been really fun both to see the questions that they have and the ways that they're interacting with it, but also the little things that they're building for themselves, the tooling. I just pay them 10 bucks an hour. They're usually doing like 4 to 5 hours a week.
Yeah, that's awesome though.
In their spare time using Cloud Code to build.
I think that's amazing. I just think that's genius. So yeah, I thought that was a cool story. Well, so last question, Kickstart is known as being like a founder first, right, organization. So maybe talk just a little bit about that, because I do think that that's important. You've talked about it a little bit, but in terms of how is that value perceived by the founders?
Yeah. So, you know, what does it mean to be founder first? I think we're eternally learning it. But at the end of the day, we just really work to be high integrity partners.
Yeah.
We are constantly seeking truth and trying to speak truth to the CEOs, that it really is just an honor and a privilege to both be on their cap table and to get to watch their journey.
Yeah.
And the nature of a venture-backed system is what generates the return is a power law. So most of them are not going to make it to what they aspire to make it to, right? Just it's only going to be a few of them. And that journey is exhausting and exciting. Like, it's a roller coaster, but the roller coaster isn't by quarter. It's like hours in the day and minutes. Be thinking about the yacht that you're going to buy and then worried about making payroll the next minutes, right? And so it's just the founder journey is really, really, it's just an honor to be able to witness it and to be in that room. And the part that we get to play is governance and counsel and an advisor through it. And I think that's what it is in founder friendly. It doesn't mean that we're writing them a check anytime that they ask, right? I think the best references that people give are often those where we said, hey, there's not another check coming, but we're still here with you.
Right.
And we're going to help you through whatever comes next. And I think we don't shy away from those hard conversations.
Yeah.
And I think it's our ability to constantly be seeking truth and helping those founders to seek truth. And then we're often the voice that will speak truth to them, both the good and the challenging.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of trust that's built in that. And at the end of the day, that's really all we can do is be a trusted advisor. And I would hope that is always what we do and what we're known for. And if it's ever not the case, like, we'll do all we can to rectify it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Kat, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time. I know how busy you are. So thank you for taking time to do this. And I can't wait to go have breakfast again.
Yeah. I look forward to breakfast. Thanks for having me.
Always
so glad with you. So thank you.
Thank you, Kat. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to KPMG's Privately Speaking podcast. And be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.